Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. We're happy to have you all here this afternoon. You are the only case on our oral argument docket for this afternoon. We have multiple cases that are going to be submitted without oral argument, but you are it for argument. To my right, I have Justice Bill Meyer.
Afternoon.
To my left, we're very happy to have visiting Judge Carrie Fitzgerald. I'm Sue Walker. We're your panel for today. I understand that counsel have announced the time they are going to argue and have announced ready to the clerk, so our clerk will call the case and we'll begin.
The court will now call Larry J. Apple versus Seneca Insurance Company, Bill Bond. May it please the court, Mr. John D. Nation will argue for the appellant. Ms. Brittany Weaver will argue for the appellant.
Our nation.
May it please the court, my name is John Nation, and I represent the appellant, Mr. Ackle. Very briefly, the facts are that Mr. Ackle somehow managed to get about $260,000 of bond amount on three misdemeanor charges in Denton County. He contracted with Edie's Bail Bonds, a DBA of Seneca Insurance, post the bonds, and he paid the appropriate fee and fully collateralized the bonds with cash or a check. The after they had been on the bond, Edie's decided or determined that he was in violation of their conditions, and under the Code of Criminal Procedure, they filed an affidavit to surrender him, which was honored by the court, and Mr. Ackle had to post the about $200,000 worth of cash to secure his release. Thereafter, Edie sued Mr. Ackle for a declaratory judgment that he had breached the contract, and they were successful in that below, and the trial court awarded them $5,500 in attorney's fees expenses. The case really comes down to what was the contract and did he breach it? The appellant argued below and put on evidence in this manner that the contract consisted of a document called Contract for Bail Bond and Indemnity Agreement and another sheet that said, it's not really titled, but it was referred to as the Rules Sheet. The Rules Sheet is definitely more explicit than the contract. It was our position below that these are two separate documents and the rule sheet is not a contract. Now, under principles of contract law, if the bail bond contract had specifically referred to the rule sheet or incorporated it by reference, well, we wouldn't be here today. But it doesn't. The contract it is not as explicit as the rule sheet, and I took it that their position was he had violated the rule sheet. Okay, well, if the rule sheet is part of the contract, then I lose, because while we contested whether he had violated the rule sheet, the trial judge chose to believe their version of the facts, and that would pretty much be an issue that the court would probably resolve against me. But the rule sheet is not a contract. It doesn't say that it's a contract. It doesn't read like the contract, and I just don't see how, under principles of contract law, that it's either a separate contract or part of the contract that was plaintiff's exhibit number one below. Now, if I am understanding the appellee's argument correctly, they're saying that the rule sheet was a contract which bound the surety to stay on the, to maintain the bond if he followed these strictures. Now, I don't know if you, if you're going to call something a contract that where I agree to do what I've already contracted to do, that's a bit of a problem for me. So my position is that the rule sheet is not a contract. Now, if he violates the rule sheet and they want to go down and get off his bond, that's fine, and that's what they did. But if they're saying that we want damages for breach of the rule sheet, no, I don't think they can get there. The, you know, the contract itself says you won't leave the jurisdiction of the court. Well, the court has jurisdiction wherever you are. It does. The contract doesn't say you can't leave the state. In fact, it recognizes that a person might go somewhere else because in paragraph 5 it says if you get arrested in another jurisdiction, we're going to go off your bond. So that, in a nutshell, is really my argument. Well, one thing, after judgment, opposing counsel very helpfully drafted findings of fact and conclusions of law, but they were, and I objected to them, assuming that they were going to be signed, but they were not, in fact, signed by the trial judge. So, you know, it's just a generalized sufficiency review. So, I appreciate it, and
Mr.
I'll.
Mr. Nation?
Yes.
Contract's not dated.
The no, it's not.
Was it signed at the same time as the rule sheet?
The rule sheet indicates, if I can read it correctly, it was signed on either April 8th or 9th of 2012. I don't frankly remember if it was signed at the same time. It might have been signed at a different time. I will gladly go back into the record and file a letter brief to answer that question.
You don't have to do that. I know where the record is, and I'll find it myself.
Well, I'm trying to be helpful.
I appreciate your offer of help now, and don't think that was the rejection of the offer of help. It's just that I can do it probably quicker than you can file a letter brief. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you very much.
And may it please the court. I would first like to thank the court for this opportunity. This is my first oral argument, so I'm very excited to be here today. But going to the issue at hand and to the argument provided by Mr. Nation, the appellee, Edie's Bail Bonds, believes that there are two main issues before the court today. First, whether or not Mr. Ackle has waived the ability to raise any issue with regard to the affirmative defenses of lack of consideration or ambiguity on appeal, and second, whether or not the evidence presented at trial was legally and factually sufficient to show that Mr. Ackle did in fact enter into these contracts with Edie's Bail Bonds, and whether or not he subsequently breached those provisions of the contracts. Now first, as to the issue of waiver, under the Texas Rules of Civil Procedure 93 and 94, an affirmative defense must be specifically pled, otherwise it is waived. Lack of consideration or failure of consideration is an affirmative defense that must be specifically pled under Rule 93 and 94, and also must be supported by a verification via an affidavit of the party asserting that affirmative defense. Then, as far as ambiguity goes, which was alleged by the appellant in his brief, ambiguity is also an affirmative defense that must be specifically pled. Now, in response to this suit brought against Mr. Ackle by Edie's bail bonds, Mr. Ackle asserted a general denial as well as a counterclaim for breach of contract, actually trying to enforce the contracts at issue against Edie's bail bonds. He at no time raised any affirmative defense as to lack of consideration or ambiguity in his pleadings or in his argument at trial. In doing so, Mr. Ackle wholly failed to present either affirmative defense in pleadings or an argument before the trial court. Now, under Texas Rule of Appellate Procedure 33, we know that any issue not addressed or brought forward before the trial court cannot be raised on appeal. Therefore, it is the position of the appellee that Mr. Ackle is precluded from raising these issues as to those affirmative defenses now on appeal because he failed to do so in the trial court. Now, should the court find that Mr. Ackle did in fact raise an issue as to either consideration or ambiguity in the trial court, Edie's bail bonds would assert that the contracts entered into by Mr. Ackle were adequately supported by consideration as shown by the evidence presented at trial and therefore were enforceable in their totality against Mr. Ackle. Now, Justice Meyer, you had asked a question as to whether or not the contract page and the rule page were executed at the same time. It is my understanding from the record that Mr. Ackle entered into these contracts on two separate occasions. They were substantially the same contracts on both occasions. However, because there were multiple claims against Mr. Ackle, he first entered into these contracts, both the contract page and the rule page, as it is called, on or about April 8th of 2012, and then again on April 14th of 2012. It was a condition and it was a requirement of Mr. Ackle to sign both pages promising that he would abide by those rules and restrictions contained therein in order for Edie's to issue the bail bonds and maintain the bail bonds throughout the pendency of his criminal charges. In doing so, Mr. Ackle was required to post collateral as well as the bond premium and to abide by the rules outlined in the contract and in the rules page in order for Edie's to, by exchange, issue the bail bonds and then maintain those bail bonds so long as he did not violate the terms of those contracts. In doing so, there was a bargain for exchange. There was a detriment that induced the promise, so each party was fully aware of the contracts before them. In fact, the testimony at trial showed that Mr. Ackle was able to discuss and question the provisions of the contracts with Edie Burgess of Edie's Bail Bonds when signing the initial contracts.
When you tried the case?
Yes, Your Honor.
All of the exhibits were in a notebook and agreed upon, I thought.
Yes, sir. All exhibits, including both contracts as Exhibit 1 and 3, were admitted.
Slow with me, because I haven't looked at this in a while.
Yes, sir.
Look at the, it's called Page 1 and the rules. I thought that they were two sheets of paper offered at the same time, and the testimony generally concerned those two pieces of paper, which I thought were treated as one contract during the trial.
Yes, Justice, that is correct.
You say lack of consideration and you say ambiguity. Is that the same thing that John is saying when he says, wait a minute, the rules aren't part of the game? It's just page one. I don't know that he's saying consideration or ambiguity. He's simply saying page one is the contract. Rules have nothing to do with this. That's what I thought he was saying.
And that's where Mr. Nation and I differ on our understanding of what happened at trial. It is our position that the two pages together make a contract. And it is my...
The second page refers to the first, doesn't it? Or I saw something at the bottom, I should have copied it, but the two pages, I noticed the bottom of one page referred to the other document, and I can't remember which one it was. Maybe it was the rules page referred to the first page.
They did, sir. The rules page at the bottom contains an acknowledgement where it says, I understand the provisions, and I agree to abide by, just generally speaking, the rules as outlined above for this bond agreement. The agreement itself was the first page as far as the specific terms of the bond premium that would be posted, And in fact, the contract page, the first page, does state that the defendant may not leave the jurisdiction of the court. And so that
second page says you don't leave Texas.
Yes, sir.
Okay, now if you're representing the defendant, what are you saying he should have said in his pleadings in order to focus on one page as the only contract?
If I was representing the defendant, I would have raised the affirmative defense that the rules page lacked consideration and therefore could not be an independent contract, that the only document or instrument supported by consideration was that first page. And I believe that Mr. Nation did raise the argument that the rules page was not incorporated by reference in the contract page. However, the case law pointed to by the appellant in his brief specifically pertains to instances where a second page was unsigned by the person charged by the original contract, and therefore, unless that unsigned page was incorporated by reference, it could not be considered enforceable. And here we do not have that issue because the second page was signed and reviewed by Mr. Ackle in connection in the same transaction in getting these bail bonds issued by Edie's Bail Bonds.
Did the defendant raise at trial what they're raising now, that only one page was the contract?
I would say that no evidence or testimony was offered in support of that contention. I know that in his closing argument, Mr. Nation did state that he was arguing based on the first page and not the two pages together. However, there was nothing more to suggest that that second page was not, in fact, a contract as offered to the court in Exhibits 1 and 3.
Ms. Weaver, in your answer to what my colleague just asked, I suppose you would have verified any objection that you would have had filed as an affirmative defense, would you have not?
Absolutely, Your Honor. This case was originally filed in 2012, and we did not actually get to trial until years later, so there was plenty of time to amend pleadings, to do further research, and through discovery, to at least realize that there were two pages being offered together as one. So in my position, I would have had my client.
Oh, that's speculative, and I thank you for answering it, and I appreciate your answer.
Thank you, Justice. If I could go on. Sorry, I've lost my place. Mr. Ackle did request findings of facts and conclusions of law from the court. A draft was submitted to the court. However, like Ms. Nation said, no findings of facts or conclusions of law were entered by the court. They were never signed. So under Farrow v. Chambers and the estate of Bray, where there is a trial before the court and no findings of facts are entered, the judgment itself implies the facts necessary to support it. In doing so, the appellee, Edie's Bail Bonds, would assert that the evidence presented at trial by Edie Burgess, by Victor Burgess of Edie's Bail Bonds, and Mr. Ackle show that the parties entered into these contracts in order for Mr. Ackle to be released from jail, and in order to maintain his release from jail, he had to abide by those rules. In exchange, Edie's would post and issue those bail bonds and maintain them throughout the pendency of his criminal charges. It is our position that the issues with regard to the second page being referred to as the rule page were never raised and therefore should not be addressed by this court at this time. So, focusing solely on the final judgment entered by the court, the appellee would request that this panel affirm the final judgment of the lower court and deny the requested relief by Mr. Ackle. Thank you. If there are no other questions.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I certainly appreciate that it's her first oral argument. I remember mine. It was in front of the en banc Court of Criminal Appeals. I got my name out and that was about it. First, as insofar as we're talking waiver, if something is a contract, yes, I have to affirmatively and file a verified pleading if I'm going to say lack of consideration. But let's say they throw a receipt at me and call it a contract. No, I don't have to do that. I think that the appellee here is maybe not so conscious of their burden. It was their burden to a preponderance of the evidence to prove they had a valid and enforceable contract. So if that's their burden of proof, not mine to disprove. So, and also, I'm not claiming ambiguity. I'm saying that the contract does not say you can't leave Texas. So I'm not, you know, I'm saying that we're construing this agreement with the four corners, and that doesn't prevent him from going out of state. Now, secondly, about the rule sheet, which is numbered page 5 of their exhibit volume, the acknowledgement does not refer to the contract. It says, I have read and understood the above rules. I agree to abide by all rules and that understand any violation of these rules can result in the termination of this bond agreement. I have the right to counsel. If I don't show you I have counsel within 36 hours, you have the right to surrender me. Doesn't refer to the contract. So, and when they entered this as an exhibit, I don't really think I have to put on testimony that there are separate pages. I think that's evident from the record. And
offer it. Do you have to make an objection because there are two pages?
Mm-hmm.
And only one of them is not objected to. The other one has nothing to do with it.
I don't think I have to make a specific objection. I had no objection to the admissibility of the document. I mean, and how it's construed is a matter for the court, and I was free to argue that it could be construed as only one document of one page and not one contract of two pages.
Mr. Nation, I have a question.
Sure.
Your first two issues, are you abandoning them?
Yes, I mean, there were no findings, so that, you know, I'm relying on my last two.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mr. Nash, can I ask you what the facts show about who initiated contact to start discussions about Edie's bail bonds, posting a bail bond for Mr. Ackle?
Mr. Ackle contacted them.
And what did he want them to do?
Post this bond. I mean, if they contacted him, that would be a violation of the occupation code.
That's the reason I ask you that.
Yes.
Mr. Ackle's made the contact,
sure.
So I want a bail bond.
Yes.
And then he was told, okay, you can have a bail bond. Here's a contract form, print
mm-hmm.
form we use. Put your name in the blank space and sign it at the bottom. And then here's another sheet that we call our rule sheet, and it goes with the first one, and you sign it at the bottom.
I don't think they put in the record that he was told that those two sheets were one contract.
I'm not asking you that.
Okay.
What I'm looking is, what were the promises between the parties here in this negotiation? Mr. Ackles is obviously wanting to get out of jail, and Edie's bail bonds in the business of posting bail bonds.
Right.
And so the meeting of the minds between them was, you want a bail bond, I'll provide you a bail bond, you pay me money at the premiums that are earned at the time that the bonds are posted.
Right.
Well, those are the promises that form the basis then of a contract, aren't they?
Right.
And so then the terms of the contract becomes what's agreed to between the parties in the implementing of that exchange of promises and the meeting of the minds for the bail bond company to post a bail bond and for Mr. Ackles to use the benefit of the bail bonds to get out of jail.
Right.
Now, Texas law doesn't require a written agreement in order therefore there to have a contract then. And if that's, if I have properly characterized just the transaction between the two people, it occurs to me that there's a contract even if there's not a writing.
Sure. I mean, the occupations code doesn't, it only requires them to maintain a receipt. It doesn't require them to have a written contract.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, thank you very much for your arguments here today. Your case is submitted. We appreciate you coming and arguing, and you are free to go about your business, and our clerk will adjourn court.
Now.